You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
High five! The Rockets won their fifth consecutive game on Sunday afternoon. That's their second longest winning streak of the season, defeating the Boston Celtics in a nationally televised game from Boston, 115-104. Houston improved to 38-25, which is a season-best 13 games over 500. The Celtics fall to 38-26, what could be a potential NBA Finals preview. Of course, both teams have work to do with regards to consistency to actually get there. But Houston not only won, they led effectively from start to finish, were ahead by as much as 28 in the second half, and for a Rockets season that's been defined by what I call upside wins, considering the stakes, considering the talent of the opponent, the sense of urgency with the calendar now turned to March, this goes up there with, I would say, any of them outside of the Golden State Warriors. So on that note, welcome in to a happy, joyous postgame episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Sunday evening, we're going to be looking at all aspects of the 115-104 win the Rockets posted at Boston on Sunday, kicking off a very difficult two-game Eastern Conference swing. They finished it up in Toronto on Tuesday night and then come back home for the sixth and final of a six-game stretch, all against Eastern opponents, against Jimmy Butler, Joel Embiid, we presume, and the Philadelphia 76ers on Friday night. So in a week that, at least on paper, the Celtics, the Raptors, the Sixers, two on the road, could prove to be very difficult, and the Rockets somehow back in the mix, not just for home court in the first round, but even the number three seed, Houston is now, as I'm recording this, within a game of the Portland Trail Blazers and within a half game of the Oklahoma City Thunder. There are a lot of options still on the table for the Rockets as they close out this season, and now that they've won five games in a row, which is within one of their longest winning streak of the entire season. That was six, which was culminated by the Harden dagger in Golden State in early January. At this point, it's hard not to feel optimistic about the way this Rockets team continues to round into form. As far as the storylines from Sunday afternoon, James Harden led the team in scoring, 42 points, 7 rebounds. Eric Gordon, who we said is perhaps the most influential variable all season long, 32 points on 11 of 18 shooting. Chris Paul had 15 points, 12 assists. PJ Tucker had 9 and 8, but of his rebounds and his points, boy, did they seem to come at influential key moments. He was actually a plus 13, which was right up there with Harden and Gordon as far as the best plus minuses on the Rockets, and he played 40 big minutes in a game in which the Rockets, without Kenneth Faried and Iman Shumpert due to nagging injuries, the Rockets needed someone to sop up those minutes, and even a veteran like PJ, from time to time over the regular season, there are games, and ideally, they won't be back-to-backs, which the Rockets had not played since Thursday and don't play again until Tuesday night, so this was an opportune time to stretch PJ a little bit, especially given the injuries, and he responded accordingly. So it's a big win for the Rockets. We'll get into the individual storylines in segment two and segment three of our usual 3 points recap. But here off the top, more than any individual, I think the most noteworthy thing to take out of today is yet again seeing the Rockets come out and execute to that high of a standard against an elite opponent. And yes, I understand the Celtics are 1-5 since the All-Star break. They've had their issues. But in part, because of that record, you know they are very focused. They are trying to right the ship the same way the Rockets are. The Celtics don't have a margin of error as far as the top four or five teams in the loaded Eastern Conference in much the same way the Rockets. They're trying to overcome their subpar start to the season in the West. So both of these teams, in some regards, it feels like kind of a mirror image for the sense that not that either team is woefully below expectations, but they're not where the fan bases would have expected them to be, or their own organizations for that matter. Two teams, the Rockets and Celtics, which going into the season we would have said this could be an NBA Finals preview, and it still could be. These are two teams in the four or five spots of their respective leagues, so it's a game that even with the Celtics entering on a bit of a tailspin, at the same time, home, fairly rested, Kyrie Irving, Al Horford, Jason Tatum, all of those guys out there, you know that Brad Stevens had them ready to play, and the Rockets came out from the jump and matched their energy and then some. In some ways, they seemed to feed off the crowd and taking them out of the game. Rockets led by as much as 28 early in the third quarter. I know it got a little bit closer, but Boston never got within eight. So even though they kept pushing, and again, I think that speaks to the fact that Boston really wanted this game, one of the more telling moments, late in the third quarter, Boston had cut it to 15. Houston finished the third quarter on, I believe, a 7-0 run, pushed it back up to 22 entering the fourth. And I thought, okay, this is when Boston thinks we made our mini run, it wasn't enough. No, they kept pushing and pushing. And we saw in the fourth quarter, they drew charges on James Harden, many of which were controversial, but whatever. The point is, their energy was there. They kept pushing, and the Rockets, I won't say that they closed the door emphatically, but in a game that never got within 8 points, it's hard to say that the Celtics ever really stressed out the Rockets that much either. I suppose the one time that there was a little bit of time left on the clock, the Celtics could have done something. They got back within nine, and that's when James Harden stuck a dagger three right in Kyrie Irving's grill. Irving actually got him on the elbow, too, so it should have been a four-point play, an incredibly difficult shot while getting contact made with a shooting elbow from Harden's perspective, but that's what the MVP does, 42 points, and 14 of 31 shooting, much more efficient than his usual career norms against Boston. We'll get into that. And the Celtics, there's a reason why the expectations have been where they are. Kyrie Irving, 24-9-6. Marcus Smart, over the course of his career, has been one of the better defenders against James Harden in the league. Tonight he had 18 points, made three three-pointers, so he was hot from that end. There was a stretch in the second half, the third quarter, I believe, where the Celtics made 6 of 8 threes, and I don't care how you're defending. If a team gets that hot, they're going to be able to make some runs. Ultimately, though, the Rockets, there's a reason you play 48 minutes, and the extent that they were able to build out that lead, that was enough of a buffer that even though the Celtics made a few runs, there was never anything that truly threatened Houston. And as I said leading off the top, I think it speaks to the Rockets' upside potential. Winning in that gym against a motivated Celtics team with so much depth and guys that have historically flustered James Harden, that's not easy. But it reminds you why the Rockets have beaten the Warriors three times, why they've now beaten the Celtics twice, why they've beaten the Raptors, the Thunder, the Nuggets twice, the Blazers, so many of these upper echelon teams. The season, to some extent, has been defined by games the Rockets have let get away. But at the same time, when it comes to looking ahead, predictive value to the playoffs, it's going to take a lot to beat a Rockets team that, at their best, you need to beat them 4 out of 7 times, assuming they're able to bring this level of intensity in a playoff series. And it remains to be seen if they can do that. That's an if and far from a given. The point is, however, that a lot of this is within the Rockets' control. So I think that's what builds so much confidence within the Rockets' locker room, is that they feel like when they have the right energy, which they did on Sunday, there are not a lot of teams, even the most talented in the league, which I would say the Celtics, 38-26, even though the record isn't where you would like it to be, I'd still put them up there as far as the top 5 or 6 teams in the league, talent-wise, especially on the defensive end of the floor with depth, those types of things, and even in their gym, the Rockets simply outclassed them, their fifth consecutive win, and it's a season in which, even though the Rockets have not been as consistent as you would like, when it comes to predictive value and reasons to believe in the playoffs, how you play when the lights are at their brightest, when the competition is really ratcheted up, that is more predictive than anything. And to some extent, maybe it also helps that the Rockets play this well when there's time off between games. They've not played since Thursday, so perhaps that helps Eric Gordon get going more. He actually took Thursday off, so he had not played since Wednesday. He looked rested. He looked refreshed. Chris Paul had 15 and 12, and I think to some degree that reflects the extra couple of days that were given to the Rockets veterans. And in the playoffs, there aren't any back-to-backs, and many times they're going to have a couple of days off in between games. So I think that's another variable that has you feeling really good about what the Rockets can be. No guarantees. Ultimately, though, I think these things bode very well. And if you want to look at the glass half-empty view rather than the glass half-full, I'm sure some will say, Ben, the Rockets almost gave this game away. Well, for starters, that would be a stretch. I've seen it characterized that way, but again, the Celtics never got within 8. But as I've said, beyond that, NBA teams are going to go on runs. You need to get over it. It's especially the case when you're playing a good team in their gym, which the Celtics are. it's pretty unlikely you're going to win wire to wire by 20 to 30 points. That's a ridiculous expectation against a good team at home playing with a sense of urgency. And when they go on a stretch, what they did in the third, making 6 of 8 threes, they're going to be able to cut into the margin. Teams in the NBA are taking more threes than ever before, and the Rockets at the top of the list, which means there's a lot more volatility than the NBA that a lot of us have grown up watching. So as far as the expectations that a team goes up 15, 20 points and you should be able to coast and just sail off with the victory, that's not the NBA that we're currently in. And then you add in the inherent volatility with so much dependent on the three-point shot with a Rockets team that at best they're hoping to get middle of the pack defensively, and for the season it's been bottom five, bottom 10 by most metrics. Yeah, if you go cold from three and the other team gets hot and or you're just unable to get a stop, the Rockets also in the third, the one thing I would point out that they need to get better at, they let the Celtics get back in it by getting into the bonus far too early and just sending them to the line on not even shooting fouls, but just by bumping them in the bonus. There are things that I'm sure they'll correct when they look at the film and they'll know they need to fix. In the grand scheme, though, NBA teams are going to make runs. So no, I don't think the Rockets took the foot off the gas once they got up 28 points. I just think inevitably a good Boston team, especially playing at home, was going to make some runs, and that's going to happen in most games. Fortunately, the Rockets over 48 minutes were quality enough to withstand them. So to me, the glass half full view far outweighs the glass half empty when it comes to a bit of a weird game in which the Rockets did so much in the first 30 minutes, then sort of had to hold on in the final 18 as the Celtics made a few pushes. The other aspect, as we're looking at this in segment one from a team perspective, is just how much we're at a point now where I think we really can recalibrate the expectations as we go into the home stretch of the season, the final 19 games now with the Rockets at 38-25. Because combining their recent now a 5-game winning streak with Oklahoma City hitting the skids, Paul George has missed his last couple of games. We'll see what happens tonight against the Memphis Grizzlies. That game's going on as I record this. The Blazers, they lost Friday in Toronto. They did get a big win today in Charlotte. The point is, the Rockets are within a half game currently of the Thunder. They're in the game of the Blazers, so you're going to be within a game of both teams either way, and you might even be tied with Oklahoma City. So a week or two ago, we might have said the Rockets just trying to find a way to fight for home court in the first round in the most advantaged bracket you can. At this point, seeing the Rockets have this run, just as other teams are starting to have some trouble, it's a reminder that with 19 games left, there's still a ton out there to play for. And one reason why this win was so big, it ensures, worst case, this difficult week, you go 1-2, Boston, Toronto on the road, then home for Philly, and you only need to win one of the next two to go 2-1, which would be a success. Now, you get greedy and you can win them all, but at this point, I'm trying to be conservative. The real reason that getting out of this week, which is difficult at, I would say, holding your head above water and being within striking distance of the other teams in the West, look what happens after this week. Dallas, Charlotte, the one difficult game is Golden State, but it's at home, part of a 4-game homestand. Then Phoenix, Minnesota, Atlanta and Memphis, San Antonio, that one at home, New Orleans. After you get through the Philadelphia game on Friday, you have a stretch of 9 consecutive games where other than the Warriors game, and that one's at home against a team that you're 3-0 against this year, other than the Warriors game, your next 9, you are going to be large favorites in all of those games. Now, that doesn't guarantee success. Again, we've discussed all year long, the Rockets, just as they posted these upside wins like they did today over Boston, they've also let some games they should have won slip away, including against the aforementioned New Orleans team just about a month ago. So it's far from a given. The point is that I'm trying to make with this is that so much remains within the Rockets' control. Even Denver, they've lost a couple more games, and they play the Rockets one more time in late March in Houston. Denver, after losing their last two, they're at 20 losses, the Rockets at 25. If Houston beats them at home, and they're 2-1 against the Nuggets this season, they're 2-0 with Clint Capella, which in my opinion is the biggest matchup advantage, that would put the Rockets within 4 games of Denver with the tiebreaker. Are we really convinced that Denver at the 2 spot is completely unreachable? I'm not. Now, I might feel differently after the next 2 games. We'll see what happens this week with Denver. The Rockets have 2 difficult ones. They'll be slight underdogs, I'd guess, Tuesday in Toronto, and then they come home, probably slight favorites against the Sixers on Friday. The real thing that I want to hit home, though, is how much, as they approach this Tuesday game and beyond, is still within their control. After everything they have been through, the 11-14 start, the 4-7, losing Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella, all the injuries, losing the first game out of the All-Star break, blowing the 19-point lead against the Lakers, all of a sudden, they're now 5-1. That's the only one, the Scott Foster fiasco, that got away from them. And they're not just in striking distance of home court in the first round of the playoffs. They're winning the game of a top three seed. Now, the tiebreakers don't play as favorably for the Rockets in terms of Oklahoma City and Portland as they do with Denver. But when you're within a game, yeah, it's all right there for you. And even Denver losing a couple and the Rockets having one more game at home, there's a ton to play for. So this game on Sunday, it's huge on so many levels. I think it's big from the upside standpoint. It reminds you that against the big boys, the Rockets are competing as well as anyone as far as games against contenders, upper echelon, well above 500 teams. We've said that for a while. And then beyond that, to post a win, ensuring worst case 1-2, and you've got a chance to get greedy and be a lot better than that, you're going to come out afloat in a difficult week, all after you've been able to scratch and claw your way back into contention, certainly for a top three seed, and maybe even, we'll see what happens with Denver, slightly better than that. Yeah, it's one that makes you feel really, really good, because as we go down the home stretch of the year, it's a big win for the Rockets in the moment. It's big for their confidence. They need to stack wins. All those things are true. But long term, getting to where they want to go, not just from a confidence standpoint, but also the logistics of climbing up the standings, if they can get through this week, and getting the first one of three is enormous, this challenging three-game Boston, Toronto, and Philly stretch, it's going to get a lot easier once you get through Friday. And at that point, in mid-March, especially if the Rockets continue their health, we're seeing, as mentioned, Oklahoma City has issues with Paul George. It's the time of year where a lot of guys have banged-up situations, teams, that is. Well, the Rockets, they went through theirs earlier. So if Gordon, Paul, Capella, all of those guys are healthy, then this might be the chance that the Rockets at full strength are as close to it as you can reasonably expect. Fareed and Shumpert still have nicks and bumps. It's a really good time to be a Rockets fan. It is just one game, but this is one I would celebrate because it's one in which it doesn't just give you confidence from the standpoint of, yeah, they beat another great team, but to see it come at the same time as some of these other teams are running into struggles and you're climbing up rapidly the standings and closing the gap, yeah, it's all out there for your Houston Rockets. What a day, what a win, but also what a way to salvage this season and turn it around. It is all out there, still on the table. Now, jumping back in to Sunday evening's show, our recap of the 115-104 win the Rockets had in Boston on Sunday afternoon, ABC nationally televised game. We spent a lot of the first segment discussing the merits of the team as a whole and what the win does for them. The confidence, also the shrinking standings gap in the West, so many angles that this is a big win for Houston collectively as a team. It's their fifth straight and improves them to 38-25 on the year. As far as individual standouts, that's what we'll do in segment two and then in segment three as we wrap up the show. Now, before I start, I do want to give an honorable mention to PJ Tucker. He wasn't one of the two most impactful players of the game, but his 9 points, 8 rebounds in 40 minutes, plus 13, it wasn't just that he put up those numbers, which are quality, and played good defense, which he almost always does, and he was especially fresh since he played just 22 minutes, ejected early in the Tony Brothers joke of a sequence on Thursday night, the big rally at home against Miami. But to play 40 minutes when the Rockets were without Fareed and Shumpert, and overall limiting Boston to 104 in their gym, that's a pretty good defensive output, especially within the confines of the Rockets' season-long projections and results. So PJ clearly, as their defensive anchor, had a lot to do with that. But also the rebounds, the shots, they came at big points to sort of stem the tide. There was 1-3 in the fourth from PJ Tucker, another from Chris Paul, where just as it seemed like there was still time left when the Celtics were making one of their pushes. It wasn't that Chris and PJ, we'll give an honorable to Chris as well, because 15-12, just as he made some clutch shots on the final 2 minutes of Thursday's game against Miami, the same could be true for both Chris and PJ tonight. The raw numbers for PJ, 9-8, for Chris, 15 points, 12 assists. But beyond that, their veteran presence, two guys who are 33 years old, been there, done that. You know how confident they are and how they don't get rattled no matter the gym. You could see that these last couple of games and certainly in the second half in Boston when anytime you go up by 30 and or close to it, the Rockets led by as much as 28, and the home team starts pushing back, especially if it's a sold-out gym, in this case national TV, the fans are going to be, in many ways, even more intimidating than if their team was in front, just because the potential upside of a win in that scenario, everyone is just so frenzied. And the steadying impact of Chris Paul and PJ Tucker, their veteran influence, beyond just their numbers, the fact that they hit the big shots at the big times, those were really, really big. But to me, the most impactful player was clearly James Harden. 42 points, 14 of 31 shooting. His 30-plus point streak is no more, but he continues to put up games that are simply ridiculous. Between this and the 58 that he scored against Miami on Thursday, he's now averaging 100. He's averaging 50. He has scored cumulatively 100. Excuse me, getting ahead of myself. Harden's not Wilt, but he's not that far away. 50 points a game over his last two, and what's most noteworthy about it is that it comes right after a stretch in which he shot 3 of 31 from 3, his first three games out of the break. The neck issue that he suffered in practice right out of the shoot, the shoulder issue he had dating back to when he ran into Steven Adams the Saturday before the All-Star weekend. So there were lots of extenuating circumstances. Not that you would ever worry about Harden, assuming he's healthy. We've been there, done that with him. He's 29 years old. He's the MVP. He should win it again. There's no reason to doubt a healthy James Harden on any level. But there were some legitimate questions as to how banged up he was between the neck, the shoulder. That's at least two separate issues. Also had the flu. So to come out and score 100 points over his last two games, including 8 of 18 from 3 on Thursday, 6 of 18, which not peak efficiency, but not bad by any stretch. Certainly not 3 of 31, anything like that. And also had the dagger 3, even when he got hit on the arm by Kyrie Irving. If anything, Harden deserved a few more points than he got. Went to the free throw line 9 times. And honestly, considering the standard of the whistle that went the Celtics' way, they got to the line so many times in the second half, 29 for the game, it easily could have been even more for Harden. So he certainly made shots overall. He had the floater game going, even if the threes weren't. He had a couple of shots on his drives in the fourth quarter. Did find a way to get to the free throw line twice when it mattered. I would have liked to have seen him get a few more calls. But even though the threes were up and down, there were a couple of things. First, he did hit the big dagger three at the end of the game. And secondly, beyond that, when the threes weren't falling for stretches, he found a way to still make things happen. The floaters getting to the free throw line so that even if the step back wasn't working, he still found a way to land knockout punches in other ways. That's why he's the MVP. But the reason this game is so important to me, and I would say it goes hand in hand with the 45 he had late in December against these same Celtics, and that was one of the games back in late December. The Rockets did not have Chris Paul, which further diluted his supporting cast and allowed the Celtics to concentrate even more resources on James. But over the course of his career, Boston is the team at 37.7% entering today that Harden had his lowest shooting percentage against in the entire NBA. And from just a raw points standpoint, excluding Houston, which obviously it's not fair to use Harden's points against Houston because they came very early in his career with the Thunder, but he was not in MVP form. But excluding Houston, the 20.4 points per game that over his career entering today, Harden averaged against the Celtics, that's second lowest in the entire league. Only the Clippers, barely lower at 19.8, are below that, again, excluding the Rockets. And the reasons for that, the Celtics are typically a very well-coached team, now by Brad Stevens, and they have great individual defenders. Marcus Smart, as good as it gets. Yes, he flops, but he is a dynamic individual defender, and if he's making threes, which he did today, it can be very difficult for anybody to take him. He is very instinctive. He moves his feet well. Give him a lot of credit. And they have so much depth. There's so many athletes, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, they're disciplined, they're well coached. The guys on the interior, Marcus Morris, Al Horford, there's not that many layups. It's not that they're shot blockers, but they're so disciplined that you don't really get the breakdowns against the Celtics that you do against most other teams. So over the course of his career, this has been one of his bugaboos. You think back to last year when the Rockets actually did blow a 26-point lead. That was the one late December against the Celtics squad. And in that one, Harden shot just 7 of 27. Later that season, in March, the Rockets came back and won that one at Toyota Center, but he was just 6 of 18. That was a year ago. That was 28-year-old James Harden. That's not his career. That's 1 year ago. Well, this year, again, 45 points, 6 assists in December. That was on 11 of 26 shooting. And then today, 42 points, 7 boards, 4 assists, on 14 of 31 shooting. The assist totals are still a bit low in both games, but that's to be expected because the Celtics have enough in the way of long bodies individually. Gordon Hayward, you could mention in that mix as well, that they don't have to double in the same way that a lot of other teams around the league do. And they have, while they don't really have true shot blockers, they have enough discipline in the paint that you don't have to collapse if you're a defense to cut him off the way a lot of other teams do. So the assist totals were low, but in both of these games, two wins, Harden averaging nearly 44 points a game on better than 40% shooting. This is a team that's been his bugaboo. I mentioned second lowest points averaged against any other team in the NBA, excluding the Rockets, lowest field goal percentage, offensive rating, which measures impact adjusted for a possession basis. If you think that points are a bit wonky based on timing, how many shot attempts, that sort of thing. Well, his offensive rating against Boston, 105 for his career. That's the lowest of any opponent in the NBA. So that's why I view this beyond just the fact that it helped the Rockets get their fifth straight win, their season best 13 games over 500. The reason this feels so good to me, for James Harden, it flies under the radar a bit because Boston is an Eastern Conference team. But if you follow the Rockets over the James Harden era, you know this is a team, this is a matchup that has given him fits. Even a year ago, you mentioned 7 of 27, 6 of 18, those games a year ago, including blowing a 26-point lead in a similar setting to today in Boston in a frenzied gym amid that big comeback. Today, it didn't happen, and one of the big reasons is that every time the Celtics got close, especially in the fourth quarter, it felt like Harden had the answers. Sometime it came with the three, such as the one he hit should have been a four-point play when Kyrie got him on the elbow. But other times, it was the floater game. He got to the free throw line 9 times and made 8 of those. Today is just a perfect reflection of the fact that even at 29 years old and now in double-digit seasons in the NBA, somehow James Harden continues to evolve and continues to improve. On top of just his raw output, which is incredible by any lens, the fact that at this age, after all this time and this enormous workload, that he continues to improve, that might be most impressive of all. And it's going to fall below the radar nationally, I think, because you don't think of Boston and Houston as rivals. You only play twice a year. But historically, this is a tough matchup for him. But like many other things this season, he's conquered it, he's figured it out, and the Rockets are flourishing as a result. Final segment of our 3 points recap this Sunday evening of the 115-104 win the Rockets posted over the Celtics. Last but certainly not least is the 32 points on 11 of 18 shooting, 8 of 12, 67% from 3 from one Eric Gordon. Also had 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and his plus 14 appropriately was the best of any player on the Rockets roster. I've said before this season, the variables for this year appear to be Eric Gordon and Chris Paul. A year ago, it was Eric Gordon and Clint Capella, James Harden the constant, and then as far as your other stars or could be close to star level on the right nights players, a year ago, you knew what you'd get from James Harden and Chris Paul, and the questions were your number 3, your number 4 options, Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, what are you getting from those guys? Clint Capella this year has taken a step forward. Now, Sunday, 8 points, 9 rebounds, minus 1, which is the only Rockets starter that had a negative plus-minus. It wasn't his best game, but by and large, he has been everything the Rockets could expect and more as a rim protector, as an interior presence. You know what you're getting from Clint. With Chris Paul, it's been a bit more mixed. I've referred to him as a variable because he's been in and out of the lineup, and early this year, his efficiency was not where it needed to be, but we know what he did a week ago, the big games over the Hawks, certainly the Warriors getting the win even without James Harden out there. Today, 15 and 12. You mentioned the big shots he had down the stretch. Also had 3 steals. So just as he did on Thursday, closing out the game against Miami, there's a steadying influence from Chris Paul, especially in the clutch. Harden actually ended up fouling out of the game. It was a little bit too late for the Celtics to really make a push. If there were any inclinations of them doing so, though, the Rockets would have had to make mistakes. And with Chris Paul running the show, they're much less likely to do that. So hopefully he's rounding into form as less of a variable to where the Rockets can feel like Harden and Paul like last year, but now plus Capella, the improved Capella this season, are constants. But the one variable that's been there both last season and this season is Eric Gordon. This year, by and large, his efficiency has slipped to levels that are by and large, unacceptable. He needs to be better than that. But over the course of his career, as pointed out by my good buddy Karthik Prasad on Twitter, March has been one of his best shooting months. I don't know why that is. Perhaps he gets a bit more rejuvenated after the All-Star break. He did have a couple extra days off because the Rockets did not play Friday and Saturday, and then he did not play Thursday, second half of the back-to-back. He's been dealing with ongoing knee irritation. So arrested Eric Gordon, 32 points on 11 of 18 shooting, 8 of 12 from 3. Again, I think that's unfair to expect even against air. I would not expect that to happen on a regular basis, but the Rockets don't need that. If they can just get an Eric Gordon that shoots in the upper 30s% from 3 instead of the low 30s, that can make a world of difference. Because if Harden, Paul, and Capella are all healthy, that is a loaded, that is a nasty big 3. And what you need is just steadiness around them. And even if Eric Gordon shoots 37% instead of 67% from 3, that may be all the Rockets need to truly be a championship contender. So it's a great sign for the Rockets. I don't know what Eric did differently other than simply make shots. Maybe it's randomness, but I suspect a lot of it has to do with being fresh. And the good news with it is, as we said leading off the top, if the benefit to the Rockets is that they play like this a lot better when they have time off in between games. Thursday, even though they got the win, it was night two for back-to-back, and they were lethargic, especially defensively, falling out to that 21-point deficit. Well, that bodes well for the playoffs, and it makes some sense with a veteran-laden team, which the Rockets are. Get to the playoffs, there's no back-to-backs. Often you have multiple days off in between games for television purposes. So if that helps unlock this version of Eric Gordon, that's massive. Because even though the bench did not give the Rockets that much tonight, Fareed, Shumpert, it doesn't seem like either of those injuries is all that minor. Fareed was about to play. They planned on him doing it entering the game, but he still had a little bit of soreness, so they were cautious. Shumpert, they've ramped up his activities. It sounds like he has a good chance to go on Tuesday in Toronto. So that'll get your bench deeper. But today, Austin Rivers just 2 of 6, 6 points. Gerald Green didn't score, 0 of 3 from the field. Gary Clark didn't score after he had 14-5 the other night. Nene was a plus 12. His energy was nice, but from a scoring output, just had 3 points, 1 of 1 shooting in his 14 minutes. Even on a day that your bench didn't get going and was shorthanded, the Rockets still beat a good team by double digits and led by as much as 28. That's how valuable Eric Gordon can be. Now, I don't think that it's fair to expect this version of Eric Gordon every game, but I also don't think you can expect this version of Austin Rivers and Gerald Green that went 2 of 9 for 6 points. You're also going to get Fareed and Shumpert back as it comes to your bench, and hopefully more energy. In the case of Fareed, hustle points. With Shumpert, more energy, help your defense, those sorts of things. The point is, even though this particular version of Eric Gordon, the stats may not be repeated, if you simply just have a slightly better and more efficient version of Eric Gordon to finish the season, the last 19 games in the playoffs, to what you've had over the first 60-plus, that can make all the difference. Because when Paul and Harden are healthy, and now you have Capella back anchoring the middle and PJ Tucker, it's a pretty strong, top-heavy team. You just need some of your role players to chip in. And over the balance of his career, just 30 years old, so it's not like he should really be over the hill, the guy who has been amongst your non-Harden, Paul, Capella, and I'll throw Tucker in there as well, because Tucker, of course, he's not a star, but he's fairly consistent in terms of what he gives you, especially on the defensive end and his motor from night to night. In terms of the guys that are truly your variables, the guy who has the longest track record is Eric Gordon, and if he's starting to feel better with his knee, and or if he just simply responds better with more time off, well, that bodes really well, because down the stretch of the year, and then as you get into the playoffs, you're going to have more time off, and hopefully, whatever's going on with his knee, the Rockets continue that program and keep him healthy, because when the Rockets are able to surround Chris Paul, James Harden, and Clint Capella with this version of Eric Gordon, they are absolutely lethal. So on that positive note, that's where we'll wrap it on this Sunday evening, our recap of the 115-104 win the Rockets posted over the Celtics. If you want more content before our next show, which will be on Tuesday evening when the Rockets play Toronto, the best place to get content before then is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. That's my handle, show handle, Locked On Rockets. And also don't forget our Locked On NBA Net handle, curated feed, experts from across the association covering their teams for their Locked On podcast the same way that I do here at Locked On Rockets. Also, if you have not subscribed to the show already, I strongly encourage you to do so. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. If you subscribe, you'll get episodes even before I'm able to post them to the aforementioned Twitter account. And if you'd be kind enough to not just subscribe, but leave a 5-star review, That's how you can help us look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model rolling here at Locked On Rockets as the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Also, if you've got questions for me or if you'd be kind enough to consider advertising yourself and help out the show that way, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com is the email address. We've got some great introductory specials. But beyond that, even if you can't advertise, if you've just got questions about the basketball team, suggestions for the show, whatever it may be, don't hesitate to reach out, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com or Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. You can send us a message or leave us a comment that way as well. With the plugs complete, this is where we'll wrap it on Sunday evening. Once again, the happy final, Houston 115, Boston 104. Rockets sweep the season series from the Celtics. They've now won 5 games in a row, which is the second longest streak of the year, and they are 13 games over 500 at 38-25, which is the high water mark of the 2018-2019 season to this point. How sweet it is. As always, thanks for listening, and please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.